The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
This is Jackson Brown, and you're listening to the Nicole Sandler Show.
Hey, this is John from Five for Fighting, and you got my buddy, my longtime friend, the lovely Nicole Sandler.
Hi, this is Donald Fagen.
And this is Walter Becker.
You know, Steely Dan. And you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hey, this is Jake Slichter.
John Munson.
Dan Wilson. We are Semisonic.
And you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hi, this is Melissa Etheridge, and you're listening to my friend, Nicole Sandler.
Hey, how you doing out there? This is Ziggy Marley, and you're listening to Nicole Sandler.
Hey, everybody, this is Pat Monahan from the band Train, and you're listening to Nicole Sandler, my favorite on-air personality.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Music to my ears.
Okay, I just thought we'd start the show off a little differently today, because I'm thinking about the role that music plays in our lives, and I think most of us, even if you're not enmeshed in the world of music, it's still important. So last night, we're watching on, I think it's Netflix, they have a Bob Saget memorial. A bunch of comedians got together, I think, at the Comedy Store in Los Angeles and paid tribute to him. This wasn't his official memorial service. This was a comedians get together. And it was Jeff Ross, who was the guy who I guess is every comedian's best friend and does the roasts. It was his thing. John Stamos, of course, who was on Full House with Bob Saget. And I guess, you know, was his best friend, if what they said is true. And a cast of thousands. I mean, a lot of Jim Carrey. Who knew? Jim Carrey, I guess, was a good friend of his. And they brought out people throughout the length of the program, including John Mayer, the kid from Full House, just drawing a blank. Oh my God, I hate it when that happens. I think of him as Blackie, John Stamos. He was Blackie on General Hospital some probably 40 years ago. See, this is how old I am and what I remember. So, yes, he was Blackie on General Hospital. Anyway, John Stamos introduced John Mayer, who was sort of like the house band, and said that John Mayer was Bob Saget's second best friend. Who knew? But then they also brought out Jackson Brown. And Jackson, I guess, was good friends with Bob Saget. See, it's kind of a small world out there. They all lived in Santa Monica, as I did for a while. Anyway, Jackson Brown performed two songs, and both, just heartbreakers of a song. The first one he did was For a Dancer, and I think the both songs he did were Go Back to Late for the Sky, which is an early Jackson Brown album and one of my favorites. But really sad songs about like death in the end. The other one was These Days. And while he's playing These Days, and again, just emotionally overwhelming songs, and all these comedians are in tears, and the camera goes in on John Stamos, who's sobbing. So music was on my mind, and I thought, let me pull out that open. So Jan said, new open. Yeah, actually, it's an old one. But it's a new intro, not a new intro, an old one. But, you know, every now and then, we need music to lift us up. I always think musically. When things are bad or when things are really good, I think of, you know, a song. And it kills me doing this show, you know, on YouTube in a place where I can't play music to punctuate anything I'm talking about. See, and I've talked about this before, my ideal fantasy job would be at a station where I could talk about whatever is important and play music. So do some biting commentary on the way things are and then punctuate it with, instead of going to a commercial, going into just the perfect song for the occasion. But I think our attention spans are so short and our musical tastes are so diverse that what I might think is the perfect song to punctuate a story, you wouldn't. And again, I can't do it anyway because you know, I'd get copyright violated. But anyway, that's my thinking as I started the show today. David was so moved by those songs from Jackson Browne last night that he was listening to a live Jackson Browne album with These Days and For a Dancer. And so I've had the music swimming through my mind all day today. Anyway, it is Wednesday. I'm sort of off topic because we're all thrown off topic. Today was supposed to be day three of the hearings of the House Select Committee investigating the attack on the Capitol on January 6, 2021. But 2 days ago, they just abruptly said, nope, Wednesday, we will not have a session Wednesday. We're going to postpone it. We will be there on Thursday. And so tomorrow, but it's a little later. They're going to start the hearing at 1 p.m. Eastern. So that's 11 Pacific. And that's better for the people on the West Coast, frankly, who I'm sure didn't love having to, you know, get up in time to be awake and aware at 7 a.m. That always bugged me when I lived in L.A., that everything was on East Coast time, right? So I guess we're taking the West Coast into account. And of course, Fox is now carrying the hearings. Despite what they say, here's the thing about Fox. They lie about everything. In case you hadn't heard it, you know, they don't play it. I had this made especially for the people at Fox, you know, because I believe in truth in broadcasting. And if they were truly being truthful, they'd run this as a as one of their positioning statements.
Your original source for fake news. Fox News.
Oops.
We make shit up.
Yeah. And so thank you, Karate Justin. Nicole, not awesome at time zones. Actually, 1 p.m. Eastern is 10 a.m. Pacific. Don't listen to me. Anything that has to do with numbers, because the math was never my strong suit. Though I'm usually good at the different time zones. I just screwed that one up. So 10 a.m., not 11. Yeah, I was going to say don't listen to me, but no, listen to me. Just know if I'm talking numbers, then I'm probably off by a little bit. Okay, so there is a lot of stuff happened today. No hearing this morning, but it has been a busy news day. Let's start here. Dr. Fauci has COVID. You know, there's a group of us, there are some of us who have been diligent about masking and social distancing and staying home and not doing things that would expose us to this virus, who still have not gotten COVID. But it seems like we, those of us, the still uninfected, are rapidly becoming a minority. I had a conversation with someone online the other day who said, well, I finally got COVID. I was being so good and I avoided it, but I went to an event and sure enough, I got COVID. So now I can live my life again. What? No, because you can get reinfected. And the dangers of long COVID are real. You know, I think people, I get it. We're sick of it. We want to be over it. But it's still out there. I'll tell you, a week from tonight, David and I are going to a concert because, you know, me and music, and it's Joe Jackson. And if you've been listening to me for a while, you know, I don't go to a whole lot of concerts anymore because I've been spoiled, frankly. 15 years doing music radio in Los Angeles, I saw just about every show I wanted to see, and I didn't have to pay for most of them. Well, I'm not in that position anymore. So, and you know, money is really tight these days, like really tight. But Joe Jackson keeps his ticket prices low. Thank you, Joe. And he tours regularly. And every time he tours, he does something different, just like with every album he releases. It's different. So Joe Jackson is on tour again. I know we saw him like last year, but he's coming back. He's going to be at the Parker Playhouse in Fort Lauderdale, which is a great room for a concert. And so, and the cheap seats where you have perfect sight of view lines, because it's a playhouse. It's small and it's just one room and there's no obstructions or anything. And the cheap tickets are like $35, 39 maybe. So, yeah, we're going. So it's a week from tomorrow. We will wear masks. I will sit in that auditorium wearing a mask. It's the price, well, in addition to the ticket price, the price I pay to go out while there's still the risk of getting sick. So, you know, it's personal responsibility. But for someone to say, oh, I got COVID, so, you know, I suffered for a few days, and now I can live my life, I can go traveling, I can do whatever. Well, no. It's just, you get COVID, I'm sorry for you. A week from tonight, that's what I said. Oh, a week from tonight. No, it's next Wednesday. Yes. You can't get what you want, Gorilla Mist, until you know what you want. Oh, Killer Queen said, tried to get a ticket at the Beacon Theater in New York City, sold out. Good to know. I'm glad Joe Jackson is selling out concerts. He is so good. I've been a fan. Sorry, just to, you know, because we can, I've got time. Since the first album came out, Look Sharp, I think it was 1979. I was in college in Tampa. And that's when I first saw him on the tour for Look Sharp. I don't remember if it was in Tampa or if I was visiting New York when I saw him, but loved the album. And then I saw him live and that cemented it. So I have been a fan. Joe Jackson has been one of my favorite artists since then, since Look Sharp came out. And when David and I first started dating, now he it's like 14 years ago. Oh my God, we've been together 14 years. Anyway, when we first started dating, a month or two into it, Joe Jackson was coming to town and he was playing at the Fillmore in Miami Beach. Now, let me give you a little bit of history. How this is so little things that bug me. Miami Beach, this beautiful theater, it's the Jackie Gleason Theater. It's the theater where Jackie Gleason used to do the Jackie Gleason Show and the Honeymooners. And if you're old enough to remember, Jackie Gleason would come out at the beginning of the show and he would say, Miami Beach audiences are the greatest audiences in the world. Because I'm old, I remember. That was the Jackie Gleason Theater. It's still standing there. It's a beautiful Art Deco theater. But I guess kids today, young people, don't know Jackie Gleason. They don't know the history there. So they have dubbed it. I guess it's under the control of Live Nation now, one of the biggest concert promoters in the world. And they've dubbed this theater the Fillmore. The Fillmore at the Jackie Gleason Theater. Well, the Fillmore is San Francisco, the Fillmore West. And there was a Fillmore East in New York as well. But the Fillmore, that's San Francisco. That's Bill Graham territory. There's no Fillmore history in Florida. And this building has no relation to the Fillmore. But they put up a few little like psychedelic-looking posters and they call it the Fillmore. And now, you know, even all these years later, now I call it the Fillmore. But for the longest time, I held out. I always call it the Jackie Gleason Theater. Anyway, Ralph Cramden area. You got that right, Henry. But that's where. So Joe Jackson was coming to the Fillmore. And again, David and I had only been dating for, you know, maybe a month. And I didn't even know if he liked Joe Jackson, but I bought tickets. And sure enough, they were in the front row. I didn't plan it that way. They just off to the side. But the seats on the side were angled. So we're looking right at the stage. Front row seats. And so that was the first time David ever saw Joe Jackson. Now I think I've dragged him to at least five Joe Jackson shows. We'll make it six on next Wednesday. Anyway, I digress. So anyway, the news today, Dr. Fauci is COVID. How that led me to that, I don't know, but there you have it. Okay. We do have a guest coming up. Let me tell you, John Nichols of The Nation will be along at the bottom of the hour. So we're going to go over the January 6th stuff, the gun stuff, the Biden stuff. What?
What do you mean you dragged me?
Well, now
to see Joe Jackson.
You liked him
because of
right.
you. I now really like him. I listen to his music even when you're not around.
I know, it's great.
You're making
isn't
me
it?
Sound like
no,
some
but
curmudgeon.
the first time you weren't really familiar with him. You knew was she really going out with him in Sunday Papers
and stepping out.
Right.
I knew those three songs.
Right,
you're right. And then when after I saw him, I was like
wow.
Holy fuck, this guy's great.
Great.
And the backing band was amazing.
Always great. He still has Graham Mabey playing bass with him. It's a lot of the same people.
But you're not dragging
me. No, but I did. Yeah, you're right. I'm not dragging you. You're happy to go. In fact, you saw when I said Joe Jackson's coming back, you said we're getting tickets.
And to quote the late great one, Jackie Gleason.
Yeah.
One of these days, Alice.
To the moon.
Zoom.
To the moon. See, we remember Jackie Gleason. Yeah. The Honeymooners. The Honeymooners. The Flintstones were the Honeymooners. So if you're too young to know the Honeymooners, but you know the Flintstones, then you know the Honeymooners. Fred Flintstone was Jackie Gleason. Barney Rubble was Art Carney. I forget the character's name. Art Carney. Anyway. Okay, back to the news. There is other news. Tell David we didn't get that impression. Okay. David, they didn't get that impression. Ay, ay, ay. I'm giddy. What can I tell you? All right, other news today. Supreme Court at 10 a.m. this morning began, again, releasing decisions. They actually gave six of them today. And they are important. If they take a case, it's important enough. But it's nothing that I need to tell you about. Nothing that's what?
Norton.
Ed Norton. Of course it's Ed Norton. Norton! Yeah, that's Art Carney, whose birthday is November 4th, by the way. Today you can tell that I have adult ADD, right? You're feeling it now, right? You see how I'm in a million different directions? This is what I live with every day. All right, so Supreme Court released six decisions today, but none of the blockbusters, thankfully. That leaves 18 more. They have 18 cases that they heard this term that they have not yet opined upon, and they will be released in the coming days. But much like the January 6th commission, we don't know exactly what days they'll be releasing those decisions. Now, Monday is a legal holiday. And I'm looking at my calendar, my old-fashioned, you know, week runner kind of calendar here. And it does tell me when there's a legal holiday. And in fact, on Sunday, it has Father's Day listed here. But Monday, what legal holiday? Well, the holiday is actually Sunday. It's June 19th. Juneteenth. Last year became a legal holiday. And since it falls on a Sunday, the following Monday is the legal holiday. So it'll be a bank holiday. Banks will be closed. Post offices will be closed. But I'm guessing you still have to go to work because it's a brand new legal holiday. And if you think back when Martin Luther King holiday first came up, nobody got that day off for a long time. Well, a few places, but most didn't. So it's coming. But if you're wondering why are people saying Monday is a legal holiday, it is. It's Juneteenth. Even though it's the 20th, it's the holiday. Okay. So the reason I bring that up is the Supreme Court, the next time, they usually do them on Mondays and Wednesdays. So they won't be doing it on Monday because it's a legal holiday. So maybe Tuesday, who knows? But Tuesday, that puts us back in conflict with the January 6th commission. However, Supreme Court starts releasing their decisions at 10 Eastern, and the committee will not gavel in until 1 Eastern, 10 Pacific. See, I got it right now. Okay, what else? Shocking video. So remember hearing this guy yesterday, big stink he made. What's his name? Barry Loudermilk. Of course he's from Georgia. They're always from Georgia, aren't they? Well, you know, we've heard for a while now that there were Republicans who gave tours, like some called them reconnaissance tours, of the Capitol on January 5th. two people who then maybe came back on the 6th, and because of the tour they got on the 5th, knew their way around the Capitol on the 6th. Well, Barry Laddermilk went on Laura Ingraham's show, of course. How could I forget? Laura Ingraham. And said, I didn't do that. Right? What the hell? Okay, now this is weird. that's real. Okay, I'm going to have to play it from the other computer. I just hit my audio thing and a graphic showed up. Okay. We know that I have gremlins, but that goes above and beyond. Okay, let's try it from here. Try it again. Laddermilk with Laura Ingraham.
Well, then they say, oh, it was at the Capitol complex. There were hundreds of people in the Capitol complex, the House office buildings. In fact, it was the Democrat leadership ordered the gift shop open on the 5th because there were so many visitors there. So Mickey Sherrill's accusation that there were no tours allowed. Well, there are no tours allowed at the Capitol, but there were plenty of people at the House office buildings because it was just another day. And now,
not true.
When it comes out, and no mistake about it, the Capitol police were clear that they are trained in looking for suspicious activity, and the group I had in the House office buildings did nothing suspicious.
I mean, it was a
did nothing suspicious.
Really? It was a lie.
Yeah.
It was a smear.
Really?
They did the same thing to Donald Trump for years.
Did they?
And then when it's shown to be nothing, they said, well, it's not really exonerated. It's not really exonerated. We're still looking into it, which is what the January 6th committee said to CNN, said, oh, no, we have other information, I guess, about you or this that's going to come to light.
Yeah.
Did you catch that on the CNN report? We cut it off before they actually said that. But
of course
you
did.
That's actually what they referenced.
That's actually what they referenced. Right. They said there's more to come. And come it did. A video. Go figure. So here's the video. I'm going to share it with you. For those of you who are just listening to an audio stream or the audio podcast, I'll read to you any text that comes up on the screen. So it begins with January 6th, 2021. A man recorded a companion as they walked to Trump's rally. Video starting any second now. Come on. Okay, the previous day on January 5th, the same man was part of a tour of the Capitol complex led by Representative Barry Laddermilk. And here's the video.
At the Washington Monument, Washington, D.C. Say hello to Facebook.
Hey, what's going on, man? Glad to be here, bro.
This is our fearless leader.
Hey,
yeah.
Baby, check out my flag I made.
Okay,
guys.
So he's showing the tip of the flagpole. Now, it's hard to see it because it's, you know, they're walking and it's blurry video, but I believe he has the tip of that flagpole fashioned as a weapon. And if you listen to what he says next, it that seems to be what it is.
See it?
Yeah. Oh, it's a spear. It's like a spear.
For a certain person. Somebody special.
Okay. After Trump's speech, that man walked toward the Capitol and made remarks about members of Congress.
All right. We are basically at the Capitol. We're probably close to 2 million true American patriots.
And it does not look like 2 million people, at least what the video that they're showing.
They're swarming and converging.
There were a lot of people there, I know, but this is not 2 million people in this shot.
But from all routes in.
Uh-huh.
There's no escape, Pelosi.
Oh, Pelosi.
Schumer.
They're showing Nadler's office. These photos are taken by members of that tour. Pictures of the House Democratic Caucus offices.
For Pelosi, Nadler,
ooh.
Schumer.
Yeah. He's naming
you, AOC.
Really?
We're coming to take you out.
Okay.
We'll pull you out by your hairs.
Wow.
How about that, Pelosi?
Wow. Sounds violent to me.
Might as well make yourself another appointment. I'll get done with you. You're going to need a shine up on top of that bald head.
Oh, my God. He seems nice. During the tour, the man took photos of hallways, tunnels, and staircases within the Capitol complex. Now, what we're seeing is security video inside the Capitol. And sorry, my picture's in the way, but that is that guy shooting pictures of the hallways, of the offices. These are places that they probably should not be in, and yet they're taking photographs, and these are not your typical tourist photographs. This is Capitol Police surveillance that we're seeing here. And I guess that must be Ladderback pointing, showing them what's where somewhere. Again, this is surveillance video. Now they're going down into the, I think where the subway is that goes underneath the Capitol. And again, these people were taking pictures. Hey, Laura Ingraham and Congressman Loudermilk, that's what CNN was talking about, that another shoe's going to drop, that there's more information. They have video. So to Loudermilk, who said, I didn't do that. Yeah, you did. And we all see it. It's right there. There's video. Go figure. So again, in that video, the man that was part of this tour that this congressman who said he didn't give a tour gave, you hear this man saying, there's no escape. Pelosi, Schumer, Nadler, we're coming for you. Lovely. CNN then said, the video released by the committee seems to challenge the findings of U.S. Capitol Police as detailed in a letter sent to Republican lawmakers this week, which said the department conducted a review of security footage from January 5th and did not observe any activities it deemed to be suspicious or consistent with a reconnaissance tour. And then Loudermilk released a statement defending the tour. He said, the Capitol Police already put this false accusation to bed, yet the committee is undermining the Capitol Police and doubling down on their smear campaign. We just saw the video. All right. So that's another thing we'll talk with John Nichols about. Also, a couple more things to tell you about that happened today. The Fed announced an interest raise increase. 0.3%, which doesn't sound like that much, but I guess it is a lot. And for those of us who have a lot of credit card debt, we're screwed, right? That would be me. I've got a lot of debt, don't have a lot of savings, and don't have any investments anymore because life, because America in the 21st century, because I could go on. George W. Bush. Well, it started there. Not gotten any better since. So as for, you know, maybe your savings or your 401k getting better returns, I don't have that anymore. So, you know, it is life. Here we are. I know that when my last house that I owned in California, though, the interest rates then were sky high. I think my interest rate on my mortgage was like 12% or something insane. Now, I think you can still get a mortgage at like 4 or 5%, but you better hurry. In other news, Elon Musk. Can he just crawl back under his rock again, please? Elon Musk said today that he voted for Myra Flores in Texas. She won the special election in the 34th Congressional District in Texas, flipping a long-held Democratic seat Republican. Elon Musk, what the... So what he's seen over the past decade, let's look at the decade, has made him think that Republicans are the way to go. He said he weighed in on his current preference. This is unbelievable. In the 2024 presidential race, saying that he's leaning towards supporting moron DeSantis. Despite the fact that the Florida governor has not formally announced a campaign, DeSantis, because he's so brilliant, responded to Elon Musk's tweet of support by saying, quote, I just got to say, this is Ron DeSantis. This is the idiotic governor of Florida who will likely launch a campaign for president, even though he can't yet because he's still running for governor. So, you know, he's going to bilk the people of Florida for this whole campaign. Then he's going to turn around and announce a candidacy for the presidency. Unbelievable. Well, totally believable, but you know what I'm saying. DeSantis responded to Elon Musk's tweet of support saying, quote, "I welcome support from African Americans. What can I say?" Elon Musk, born in South Africa. So DeSantis calls him an African American? For both of them, I'll just play it for Ron DeSantis and Elon Musk. The two of you deserve one another, but I just want you to shut the fuck up.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, because nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
Really? Shut the fuck up. All right, there's more, but you know what? It is now 5:30, and it's time to call John Nichols. So let me just make sure I'm calling the correct phone number. Is it that's the one? Okay. So John Nichols, of course, national correspondent for The Nation magazine, and we're doing it the old-fashioned way. Oh, that's me calling. I'm just like, well, who's calling me now? No, that's me dialing, because I'd so rarely use the phone these days, right? Oh, I forgot to bring up his picture, didn't I? All right, we'll work on that if he answers.
John Nichols.
Hey, John Nichols, it's Nicole Sandler calling.
Hey there.
How are you?
I am very well. How about you?
You know, hanging in there. I'm a little bummed that we didn't have a hearing today, because I worked myself up to, you know, cover these things, and I had the popcorn ready to go. I've got extra popcorn now, but I guess that's a good thing, because there's a shortage of popcorn in movie theaters. Did you hear that?
Did not know that. And it's amazing, because the amount they charge for it, you would think, you know,
right,
there would always be enough.
Right.
But I will tell you, your popcorn will be very, very useful tomorrow.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Because Mike Pence hearing will be more than worth the price of admission.
Oh, is Mike Pence the focus of tomorrow's hearing?
Yes, he is, although he will not be there, because he, despite the fact that he had courage on one day, he does not have courage on every day.
No, and he will not, you know. Yeah, Mike, courage. I hear, you know, Bert, what was his name? Bert Weiss, the Cowardly Lion, when you say courage,
yeah,
in connection with Mike Pence, because there was nothing courageous about him. In fact, he didn't even make the decision to do the right thing.
One day he did the right thing for about, you know, a couple hours. And
yep,
I'll give him his due. He did something that, frankly, a lot of Republicans don't have the guts to do. Right?
Uh-huh.
He didn't do what Trump asked him to do. But as I'll write about in a piece for The Nation tomorrow, when you look at the details of it, Pence looked for every way he could to avoid having to stand up to Trump. He apparently consulted with people and said, is there any way I can do what Trump wants me to do?
Right.
And the thing is that amazingly enough, the guy who saved the Republic was Dan Quayle.
I know. Right.
Because Quayle told him, no, you got to follow the parliamentarian. You got to do what, you know, you got to do what's required here. It's a constitutional duty. And Pence tried to avoid that. So I don't happen to believe there's anything particularly heroic about Mike Pence.
No.
I think that he, on that day, for a period of time, did the right thing. And I give him his credit for that. I think what he did was important. He saw this process through. And, you know, good for him in that on January 6th. The complexity, of course, is now, because now is the time when he should be seeing it all the way through and, you know, testifying before the committee. He should be there tomorrow. He should be saying, you know, exactly what pressure Trump put on him, exactly why he chose to resist that pressure ultimately, all the details of it. This is an essential part of the process. And the fact that he is not showing up tells you something really profound about Mike Pence. And that is that he puts his delusional 2024 presidential ambitions, because there's no way Mike Pence is going to be president of the United States. He puts his delusional 2024 presidential ambitions ahead of his loyalty to the country.
Yeah. See, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, doesn't he have anybody who runs numbers who can tell him, hey, Mike, you're not going to be president. It's not going to happen. So why don't you do the right thing?
Exactly. Exactly. And you see, I think that's actually what's happened with Liz Cheney.
Uh-huh.
And who's not, you know, look, we should be very honest about Liz Cheney. Not a good player historically.
No.
I mean, an extreme right winger, a very nasty, cruel, abusive right winger when she was in leadership in Congress, somebody who attacked every member of the squad personally in, you know, very cruel and crude ways. Somebody who has never met a war she didn't like.
Yep.
Who voted more right wing than much of the Republican leadership, was actually very much a Trump loyalist in a whole bunch of ways. But she's come over to the other side. She's now actually doing a quite competent job in these hearings. And the thing to remember, though, is why she is doing this competent job in the hearings. It is because I think she knows full well that she's not gonna get reelected from Wyoming. I mean, that's not going to happen.
Wow.
The polling data is terrible for her. She's not from Wyoming. She's from Washington, D.C. She was a transplant out there just to get a congressional seat. And those people aren't particularly loyal to her. And so even, you know, unlike some of these people like Kemp in Georgia and some who can stand up to Trump and maybe survive, I don't see any evidence of that. So my sense is that with Liz Cheney, what you're really getting is someone who is, you know, putting on a good performance now, and more power to her. I don't, you know, detract from that. I think what she's saying on the committee is very good, all power there. But we should put it in context and understand she's doing it because she has to enter the next stage of her political life. And she knows that there's no way she can go back to this Republican Party. It will not welcome her.
Right.
They've already condemned her and, you know, throwing her out. And so, you know, if you see it in that context, she is, you know, useful at this point, but perhaps not jaw-droppingly courageous.
Right. Well, you know, she's such a, I don't even know what the word, there's a weird dichotomy with her. Because, again, we're applauding her performance on this committee. I think she's doing a great job. But then you look at the
Terrific.
Votes, the votes she takes, and she's voting like the most hardline right wing, because that's Liz Cheney. And she is really a conservative, as opposed to people like Trump, who have no ideology. It's just whatever, you know, is against what we want, it seems. She's
100%
conservative.
Right.
So I almost feel sorry for her. If I didn't look at her votes and get disgusted each time she casts one, you know, there are times I'm cheering her on and then I think, oh, wait a minute, that's Liz Cheney.
Help me let me help you feel a little less sorry.
Okay.
After she did one of her, you know, performances on the committee, good performance, by the way. Again, I'm not trying to trash her. Maybe that's the wrong word to use. But after she appeared and said some stuff, she sent out a fundraising letter. And a friend of mine who's on her list got that letter. And the top of the letter is, you know, there are some things that are more important than party. And, you know, sometimes you have to stand up for the Constitution. All sounded very good, the first paragraph. But then after that, it's like, and so I hope you'll give me money and send me back to Congress so I can stand up to the Democrats be strong on the border and strong against their, you know, socialist agenda. And it was every single, I'm not kidding, it's every single thing that the most over-the-top, out-of-the-box Trump loyalist would say, right? It's very, almost indistinguishable from Marjorie Taylor Greene or Lauren Boebert or all these other folks as regards the attack on Democrats' side. The one thing that you give Cheney is that she's also willing to call out Trump.
Right.
But even that, I think you have to put in perspective, and recognize that I think Cheney's ambitions are so great that she's actually, in an odd kind of way, she's willing to battle Trump, because I think she actually believes the Republican Party is her possession. You know, that it is, that she and her father and her family, you know, have a claim on the Republican Party,
right,
that Trump has sort of been an interloper on. Trump has sort of come in and taken from them something that they see themselves as owning. And if you see it in that context,
I do.
You, I think, understand a little better why she's so aggressive in her, you know, take down Trump.
Right. Hey, John Nichols, let me take you on a little detour here, because
sure,
I have agreed with some commentators, to much to the dismay of the chat room here, that we do need a strong Republican Party. If we're going to have a real democracy, you need a two-party system, right? You need somebody to fight against, somebody to mm-hmm. You know, to give the other side. We have a lot of opinions in this country. So I think we do need a strong Republican Party. I don't think they need to be as heinous and hateful and disgusting as today's Republican Party, but I think we do need, we need that other party. Because if it was just one party, it doesn't matter who's in charge, we'd descend into fascism. So I'm wondering why Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger and a handful of others that, who maybe are not in Congress but are all over MSNBC these days, the Never Trumpers,
yeah,
why don't they split that party apart?
That's a very, very good question. And obviously, I think that some of them may. But the problem is that we really are a very deeply divided country. And so... do you really think that Liz Cheney would be all that welcome in the Democratic Party of Wyoming?
No. And I'm not saying she should be a Democrat. I'm saying I don't want her. Why don't they split the Republican Party and have make a conservative party and let Trump have the Trumper Party? I'm saying split the party in half so that the real conservatives can take back the Republican Party.
So what you're really saying is, and just to be clear here, that you're not particularly a fan of the two-party systems, right?
No, I'm actually not. Yeah,
I'm not either, because that's where I'm at.
Right.
I think the two-party system is an incredibly destructive system,
mm-hmm.
and we have it. We're stuck with it.
Right.
But that doesn't mean we should be happy about it, and that doesn't mean we should lie about it.
Right.
The fact of the matter is that the United States should have four or five parties.
That's right.
Right. We should have a clearly socialist or social democratic party on the left.
Yep.
We should have a, you know, a centrist party, not Joe Manchin type stuff, but you know, a more centrist democratic party. There should be a, you know, for lack of a better term, a Wall Street party, a small to mid-size and bigger business party. Then you should have a hardcore social conservative party. And probably a libertarian type party, right?
I agree.
That's your spectrum. You can have more. But if you look at Germany as an example, a country with a pretty functional democracy set up after World War II for the purpose of actually, you know, trying to have something that worked, that's effectively what they've got. They have five or six parties. And the key there, though, is that they have a different election system than we do.
Yep.
And the reason we don't have – the reason Liz Cheney and Kinzinger and others aren't splitting off, they would have split off long ago in a country like Israel.
Right.
In a country like Belgium. There's a lot of countries where it's very easy to form a new party, and it can be relatively small and still in the Netherlands also get representation in the parliament.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have done that. But our system is the worst of all systems in this regard, because – if you split off, you know, say as a member of Congress, you're still going to be running in a congressional district that has been drawn to favor one party by and large through gerrymandering.
Yep.
And it's just the avenue in is very, very difficult. So we have a systemic problem, and that systemic problem stands in the way of repairing our democracy, of making a democracy that is much more fully realized. And here's another subtlety that relates to this. it does, it comes, brings us right back into the 9/11, or I'm sorry, apologize, to the January 6th committee.
Right. Yeah.
And this is it. This January 6th committee is going to be charged with making recommendations for how to deal with the mess that we're in, right? How to make sure that we don't have another January 6th on January 6th, 2025, or at some future point.
Right.
And the best way to do that, the single best way to do that, is to eliminate the Electoral College.
Yes.
Because if you get rid of the Electoral College, then you don't have this situation where a handful of states with close results become dominant. You don't have this situation where the determination goes to this sort of archaic circumstance in Congress where the vice president stands up there and they open up boxes and review what's in them and stuff like that. We would have, you know, if you eliminate the Electoral College, you'd have a majority rule.
That's right. Right?
And of course, if we had majority rule, right, nothing about our problems would be the same as they are. We would have other problems, sure, we right. always do. But right off the bat, Al Gore would
be president.
Two terms as president.
That's right.
No, he would have served two terms.
That's right.
You know, that's pretty good given.
Yep.
That would have been a complexity because, you know, maybe Barack Obama would have succeeded him.
Maybe.
Because Obama is such a brilliantly skilled political figure. But one way or the other, whatever happened there, if indeed you had a 2016 election between Hillary Clinton and Trump, Hillary Clinton would have easily been president.
Well, because she got millions more votes. And if we're
3 million
how
more.
Dare we call yeah. ourselves a democracy and majority does not win, you know, whether it's a presidential election or a vote in the Senate. The fact that the Senate requires 60 votes, there's nothing in the Constitution that says anything about the filibuster. The word is not in there, doesn't mm-hmm. appear. This was a man-made, made-up thing that has no legal basis, yet it controls everything, and it makes minority rule in the Senate. This is not a democracy.
That's exactly right. And it's a, in fact, we're quite, and sometimes our right-wing friends actually make that point. And they're very excited to say, no, we're a republic,
right.
not a democracy.
Yes. Well,
but in reality, we kind of bowed to the idea of being a democratic republic, right?
Yeah.
I.e. where there was a measure of democracy feeding into a Republican form of government. But we've gone so far from that that we don't even begin to approximate that idea anymore. Because as you're referencing with the United States Senate, we've got a situation in the United States Senate where roughly a third of Americans can stop anything from happening.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
A small minority, because it's that every state has two senators, and most of the Republican senators often come from very small states like yep. Wyoming,
that's
or Montana,
right. or North
and
Dakota,
result,
or right,
yes,
where you
South
know
Dakota
where they have the same number of representatives for North Dakota or South Dakota or Nebraska that California has, that New York has, that Florida and Texas
yes.
have, and that's again, it is so broken. That and to give the minority, which in this case represents a real minority of the people, more power to overrule the majority is just astounding. How did we get to this point? And for the right to always talk about what the founders would have wanted, well, they didn't have the filibuster.
No. And here's another subtlety of it, too, as regards, look, if we talk about the founders wanted, right, in 2016, Hillary Clinton would have become vice president.
Oh.
That's how the system was originally
uh-huh,
set up. The person who came
right.
in second became vice president.
Mm.
So we don't do we changed that because, you know, we had a situation where the vice president shot the former secretary of the treasury and we started to think, well, maybe we need a different system.
Yeah, yeah.
But they did make quite a play out of it.
Yes, they did.
But the bottom line is that the idea of saying what the founders wanted is, you know, it always throws us off. But if we go to that basic concept that the founders wanted a House of Representatives to be very small, be democratic, you know, kind of tightly related to the people, that the people's voice would be heard in this, in, at least in this context. Well, it's not that anymore. So congressional districts have 600,000-700,000 people in them.
Mm-hmm.
But the numbers vary. And so small states get more representation, right? That their individual member can, again, in the case of Wyoming, as an example, Wyoming doesn't have as many people as is required for a congressional seat, but it still gets a congressional seat.
Wow.
Right?
Yep.
And so what we start to recognize is that we've ended up with a system where all of the balances are out of place. All of the calculations are a little bit off, and in some cases, a lot off. What that means is that for a very long time, and this does bring us back to the January 6th committee and its recommendations or potential recommendations. For a very long time, we had what was referred to as a gentleman's agreement, right?
Yeah.
And what that really meant was that, kind of mainstream corporate folks in the Democratic Party and mainstream corporate folks in the Republican Party, they kind of got along with each other. Mm-hmm. They went out for drinks. They knew each other well. They were usually white men of a certain age.
Right.
And the end result is that things kind of moved toward the center. They moved toward a very Wall Street-friendly, free trade-friendly corporate center, which wasn't all that good.
Right.
The great mass of America,
and it should be said that that's the world that Joe Biden has inhabited for the last 30, 40 years.
Yeah. And frankly, that Bill Clinton inhabited.
That's right.
Obama broke with it a little bit, but ultimately wasn't able to crack it.
Yeah.
And so you ended up in this situation where when Democrats got elected, they did things that the average American thought Republicans were going to do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Free trade deals.
Yeah.
And a lot of corporate, deregulation, stuff like that. That created a circumstance where a tremendous number of Americans are truly felt disenfranchised, disenchanted, cheated politically. And that's what gave you a Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And so, the gentleman's agreement worked for a long time and kept us stable, quotation marks around the word stable. But it ultimately set up the instability that we are now in. And so when this January 6th committee wrestles with all of this, right, it's not going to be easy. At the end of the day, they're going to have to make a set of recommendations. And the baseline recommendations are going to be as regards, Donald Trump. Do you prosecute the guy? Should you prosecute him? Of course, the answer is yes. He should be prosecuted. That's not a complicated issue. But there'll be a debate about it. They'll be wrestling back and forth. There's no guarantees that they'll get to where they should on that issue. But once they've dealt with that and dealt with some of the other prosecution issues, hopefully also making a recommendation to Congress that the Congress do a sense of the House and sense of the Senate resolution saying that under Amendment 14, Section 3 of the Constitution, Donald Trump is disqualified from seeking the presidency in the future because he violated his oath and participated in
an insurrection.
So they should do some things like that. These are all Trump accountability moves. But once they're done with the Trump accountability moves, they have to make some recommendations as regards how our democracy should work going forward. And I hope, I genuinely hope that they'll go big, that they will lay out a real agenda for how to repair American democracy, knowing full well that some of it will take a long time to get, some may never be gotten, but at least they should make it clear so that the front page of the New York Times and CNN and Nicole Sandler's show and everybody is talking for at least a few days about what we ought to do to create a functional democracy in this country. I hope they get there, because if they don't, if we've gone through all of this and their recommendation is, let's tinker a little with, a couple of the rules as regards what the Senate does on January 6th, they're not going to get to the heart of the matter.
Right.
And my great fear is they're going to set us up for, additional ongoing turbulence of the sort that we've had to deal with, now, not just for the last 2 years, but really we've been in a very chaotic situation since about 2010.
Yes.
And the rise of the Tea Party and the Republican wave election in 2010, et cetera. So, it's not like things went bad the other day. things went bad quite a while ago.
Sure.
And we need to start to really reflect on that.
But have we missed the boat? I mean, that's my concern, the cynic in me. Mm-hmm. You know, occasionally a CY comes on at the beginning of my name. I become cynical instead of just Nicole. And you know, when that part takes over, I get really, I go low. I mean, I worry that we missed that boat, that now the Republicans have been able to steal the Supreme Court to the point mm-hmm. where I'm terrified. Sometime in the next 3 weeks, we're going to get two big decisions, one reversing Roe v. Wade and the other making open carry legal probably everywhere in New York City. The gun problem we have is already debilitating. I was afraid to go to a march on Saturday because that I thought a crazy person would go nuts with a gun. I don't think you're safe mm-hmm. anywhere anymore. And we're like this on every front. The Supreme Court is about to take us back more than 50 years. I'm worried that the Democrats sat idly by while the rug was pulled out from under them, and I'm afraid it's too late.
Well, you're absolutely right. The Democrats did sit idly by while the rug was pulled out from under them. I'll remind you, Nicole, that you and I, quite a few times over the years, have spoken on this show
yes, we have.
About the problem.
Yes, we have. For many
it's
years.
Not like it was evident.
No.
It's not like we didn't see it coming. We did. And a lot of us warned going back at least to 2008 when we were talking about the bailout of
yep.
Wall Street, when they
yep.
bailed out banks rather than homeowners.
Rather than homeowners. Hello. And that's, you know what, I hate to say it. Back in 2008 is when I fell prey to that. I was cut. I was fired by Clear Channel, right? My job. Mm-hmm. I lost my job mm-hmm. as everybody did. I lost my home in a short sale, and I'm watching
sure.
billions of dollars go to the banks when they could have still gotten to the bank, but if they funneled it through me so I could pay down the mortgage, I would have been made whole just as the banks were, and I wouldn't be in the position I'm in now 15 years later.
Well, let me tell you something else that would have happened. If they had funneled it through you, right, it would have stabilized your situation.
That's right.
It also would have would have prevented the Great Recession.
That's right.
That we had in 2009, 2010, which was what then fed into the creation of the Tea Party and everything else. I mean, a series of disastrous decisions were made. And those disastrous decisions have haunted us to this day.
That's right.
And many of those decisions were made with the full support and embrace of the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
We have to recognize that, because if we don't, we don't begin to get to a point where you can start to repair and you know, renew.
Exactly.
And so this is the big problem. Here's my big fear, is that the January 6th committee goes soft rather than hard.
Uh-huh.
It goes small rather than big. That they have all these hearings, and they're pretty jaw-dropping, right? People are coming away from them, and I'm, you know, doing a lot of media talking about all this, and,
mm-hmm.
and it's very clear people are surprised that this has turned out to be a much more dramatic set of hearings than we expected,
yep.
right?
Yep.
And so all of this is coming together. It's real. It's consequential. And at the end of the day, it's recognizing, you know, this reality, this meaning, and giving us something that we can sink our teeth into,
mm-hmm.
real recommendations, real clarity, that it gives us pablum.
That it gives us
and
what?
If it gives us pablum.
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 Pablum. Yep. Got it.
Yeah. And if it gives us pablum, we end up in a situation where I promise you that it will go away quickly, right? This will just be a report that's filed and it
Mueller.
Goes on the wall.
It'll be the Mueller report.
Yeah.
All over again.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, I had a friend who used to deal with this stuff a lot, you know, actually at the state level. And they always appointed these blue ribbon commissions, and the commission's job was to address corruption or to do something. And he said, ultimately, he referred to it as fish tank balancers, right? That he had a fish tank, and he always needed something to put under one corner
right?
to make sure that it was even. And he said,
And eventually it's up on stilts, right? Eventually it's on stilts, and then it collapses.
Well, but the bottom line is that you never take it out, right?
Right.
Once you put it there, mm-hmm. it's never removed from that position where you use it to balance a chair,
right.
Balance a fish tank, something like that. And I can tell you, Nicole, if that's what this becomes, if that's what we're given, is, you know, a fish tank balancer or something that goes on the shelf, Trump will be strengthened by this, not weakened.
I fully agree, and that's what's so frightening. And, you know, John Nichols, I said that I wondered why Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger and the rest of the MSNBC never-Trumpers don't, you know, split the party in half. Well, I wonder why we don't either. We have Nancy Pelosi, Steny Hoyer, Jim Clyburn. Leadership in the House is average age is like 80. What are they holding on for? These kids who are coming up are brilliant and they're willing to take control and it's their future. And yet Nancy Pelosi will not let go and has such a strong hold that the Democratic Party is toothless now. We get nothing done. So I think we need to split as well.
Well, we may never get to that, though, because the systemic challenges are so great.
Right.
That, you know, the talk of the split is always easier than the reality of the split.
Yep.
You know, and I've been around it 100 times where people have said, you know, well, we've got to do it. We've got to do it. And when someone actually has the courage to go do it, right, when they actually start an independent project or something like that, they usually end up abandoned.
Yeah,
right. They end up alone out there, and it falls
Liz
apart.
Liz Cheney.
Yeah.
Right.
And so the end result is that I favor a multi-party democracy. I also favor a battle for the soul of the Democratic Party.
Uh-huh.
Right. A recognition that the Democratic Party is a modestly better vehicle at this point. Maybe a significantly better vehicle considering what's become of the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
And so as such, the fight for the soul of the Democratic Party becomes consequential. And that's why these primaries across the country are such a big deal,
yep.
Right? It matters to challenge Democratic incumbents who are failing us. And frankly, it does matter to give support to sorry about the wind here. It's just getting crazy.
I hear.
It matters to give support to a rising generation of young Democrats
yes.
who are, you know, who do have a vision for the future. And it's a vision that is an alternative to where the party has been going for a very long time.
Right.
And the big deal about this, the big thing about this is when you mentioned the three current leaders of the Democratic Party in the chamber, this is a fact I always try to give people for what it's worth. Their combined age is greater than the country.
Yes, right.
Older than the United States of America.
Right.
And that's something that the founders of the American experiment, who were very imperfect, who mm-hmm. had many, many flaws, but the founders of the American experiment tended to be quite young. And what they said, even at the time, as relatively young people, was the one thing we know is that we're flawed.
Uh-huh.
Right? That's why they allowed for amendments to the Constitution. That's why they had a lot of fail-safes like impeachment and other things put in. They knew that bad players were going to rise and there were going to be real challenges when it came to keeping the experiment on track, mm-hmm. you know, doing anything with it. And so one of the things that of all people, Jefferson said was that you can't expect people to live under this forever,
right?
Because that would be like putting somebody in a straitjacket forever.
Huh. Uh-huh.
And he wasn't the only person that talked about that. Thomas Paine, who was obviously, to my mind, the most preferable of the founders, the one
sure.
who is best on a host of issues. Thomas Paine warned, you know, very passionately about the need to, you know, constantly reform, to keep evolving and changing. One of the big problems, I think, with the Democratic Party at this point is the Democratic Party has become the party of status quo. It's the defender of what's seen as stability or normalcy,
right.
Whereas the Republicans are the radical party, right?
Right.
And they're the ones really trying to change a lot of stuff. Now, it happens the Republican changes are terrible.
Yes.
They're indefensibly bad. But at a time when people are hurting and feeling ill at ease or uncomfortable, they're like, yeah, okay, I don't I don't necessarily like Donald Trump. I don't even think some of this is good, but we got to change something, right?
Right.
And the Democrats have to do a better job of being an alternative to that.
Yes.
They have to become a party that folks can say, yeah, I'm going to vote for this party because I know things have to change.
Right. So,
and
you know, Nancy Pelosi as leader of the party is not signaling change. It's signaling same old, old ideas. She's not part of the future. It is time to move on. And I think that these, I hate to say it, dinosaurs holding on for dear life, grasping, you know, to retain what they can of their glory days is hurting the country. It is time to turn power over to the next generation. It's their future, not ours.
Well, and remember, this is true in the Republican Party as well.
I know.
It's not like Mitch McConnell's a young man.
That's true. That's true.
And,
Trump.
They're working very hard to reelect Chuck Grassley, who's 88 years old.
I know.
So when we start to see, it's both parties.
Yeah.
Both parties have a real problem in this regard. And the challenge is that I can tell you right now, I cover this stuff pretty closely. We're not going to change the Republican Party anytime soon.
Nope.
The Republican Party is actually quite happy with what it is. It's working according to plan.
Horrible.
I know, but that's the reality. They are on track this year, not certain, but
right.
but possibly to take back control of the House, maybe even the Senate.
Oh God.
No, you got to face that reality.
I know.
I'm not saying it will happen.
I know.
I'm just saying it's a midterm election.
And
it's possible.
It scares the crap out of me every day. Every day.
Well, it should. But
I
then
know.
You put this. But the Republicans aren't going to change if that's going to happen. Right?
Yep.
And neither are their donors.
Yep.
Wall Street folks, the corporate folks are going to say, yeah, we're going to have to put up with a little bit of fascism.
Yep.
Right?
Oh, God.
We're going to have to put up with a little bit of authoritarianism. But boy, we're going to get those tax cuts.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. Just what we need now, tax cuts. You know, and I need to qualify one last thing, John Nichols. When I said these dinosaurs need to turn it over, it's person specific because I'd still bend over backwards to have Bernie Sanders as president right now because he may be chronologically old, but his ideas are the future and not the same old. So I'm not an ageist. I'm old myself. But we have tired ideas running everything in D.C. And I think the Democratic Party is just stagnant and it's losing people because of that. They need to show that they can do something different and they're showing the exact opposite.
I think you're getting to the heart of the matter there.
Yeah.
And that's the reality. I don't care how old someone
no.
is. And I don't care, you know, where they come from, what their background is,
yep.
et cetera, as long as they're actually trying to do some good for the great mass of human beings, for
right.
the great mass of Americans. And it's one of the reasons why I do think you have to have diversity in your representation. You have to have a real mix of women and people of color, people of different ages,
without
people from
doubt.
Different regions. You need that because in that dialectic, if you will, you're likely to get a better representation, a better sense of where the country can and should go. And ideally, you know, I think we are slowly but surely in some of our elections moving that direction. But boy, the resistance to it is so overwhelming, so intense that, you know, this is, as you could tell from our conversation, this is a turbulent time.
Yes, it is. And I'm so thrilled that we can have these conversations. Hopefully they can continue because I truly do worry about what's in store for us, both from the Supreme Court and from the January 6th committee. So much is at stake right now. Like everything is at stake and everything can change ridiculously over the next 30 days. So
that is totally true. And in fact, I actually do think it's pretty safe to say that, you know, as regards to the Supreme Court, it's probably most of this is going to happen before the end of the month.
Yeah, I know.
And so we're looking at some major stuff. What I always say, though, about all this, when bad things are coming our way.
Yeah.
It's not about the bad things that come our way. It's about how we respond to them. It's what we do with the moment we find ourselves in. If we don't like what the Supreme Court is doing, as an example, elect a Senate that is sufficiently progressive, that is sufficiently not just democratic, but willing to actually act on it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I mean, I know that's not easy. I'm not romantic about this, but I can tell you, we know what we have to do. We know how we have to respond. You have one of two responses, right? You leave, find another country.
Yeah, and I know people who are doing that.
I know people think that way, but most people don't have that option.
Right.
Or you engage in some sort of very sincere effort to repair the country that you have.
Right.
I happen to be on the side of the sincere effort to repair the country that we have. And that is going to require a lot of us. But the starting point is going to be in places like Florida, where you live.
Oh,
and Florida really needs
horrible.
A new governor
Florida,
and a new senator.
Oh, without a doubt. And unfortunately, we don't have the right people stepping up. Ron DeSantis is, I try to warn people every day, he's more dangerous than Trump. Watch out for this guy.
He is. You're so right.
I know. And
because he's a smart Trump.
Exactly. A better educated Trump.
Very smart and very quick on his feet.
Yep.
Nasty. Every bit as cruel as Trump.
Every bit as cruel and nasty and just an evil excuse for a human being. But he knows how government works, which Trump doesn't. And so he can use those to manipulate them in his favor. He is dangerous. And the fact that his approval ratings are still high scares the living crap out of me. The rest of the country better listen. This man is evil. Elon Musk is now touting him as his choice.
Likes him.
Yeah, of course.
And you saw the glib remarks that
I'm happy to be supported by African Americans. Oh my God!
Yeah. I know, it's jaw dropping.
Yes,
and you end up in a situation where, just in that little moment, right, that little bit of evidence, you see just how dangerous DeSantis is, and just how quick on his feet he is.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
And so here you end up with a guy who really is deeply problematic. And the way to deal with that, quite simply, is to beat him in an election.
Florida
has a moral duty.
So we have Charlie Crist or Nikki Fried. And I hate to say it, Nikki Fried is not going to win. So Charlie Crist, a former Republican, is our only chance to beat evil DeSantis. It's opposite world again because
I know.
Yeah. So we could go around in circles.
I remember covering a debate with Charlie Crist and Bob Graham.
Oh yeah.
I think this would have been the '80s or early '90s.
Did they run against each other? I think Charlie Crist came after.
I know
Bob.
Crist ran for Senate once. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, maybe
a very long time ago. I hope I'm
not
wrong on this.
That might have been before I came back here.
Will correct me.
Yeah.
But what I'm telling you is the reason I bring that up is that Crist has been at this forever. Right?
He is a career politician.
Permanent fixture.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I know enough about having covered politics for a very, very long time that when you're faced with a truly major threat, you need a popular front, right? You need people to come together.
Yes, you do.
From the left all the way over to the center and even the center right.
Yep.
To prevent the crisis.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And so to me, Florida, I've got a relative level of clarity about Florida.
We could right? do worse than Charlie Crist. You know, when he was governor last time and he was a Republican, I did a morning show with a great political reporter. I don't know if you know Jim DeFiti or not, but Jim used to call Charlie Crist the best Democratic governor Florida's had in decades. And Charlie Crist was a Republican. So, you know, if that's what we have to go back to, so be it. We just need to get rid of DeSantis.
Yeah, because I think DeSantis, I mean, for a variety of reasons, DeSantis's play, and in the book I did a while back on coronavirus criminals and pandemic profiteers.
Yes, remember. Yeah.
I've got a chapter on DeSantis in there. And it's the interesting thing because the book has deals with a lot of different issues and a lot of different problems. But the chapter on DeSantis is actually about democracy And people might say, well, how does democracy relate to coronavirus? Well, in Florida, as you well know, local governments were trying to do the right thing.
I know.
To protect
and getting
people
fined.
And vaccinate them.
Yep.
Exactly. And far from being a Ronald Reagan, small government, you know, problems are best solved at the local level, Republican, Ron DeSantis was a big government, big authoritarian
yes.
governor.
That's right.
I mean, he superseded school boards and yep. village boards and city councils, county commissions to get exactly what he wanted.
And he's still doing
politically.
It. Still doing it.
Exactly. And so when I look at Ron DeSantis, I genuinely see somebody who is more threatening in the long term than probably any other player in our politics. And here's I'll give you one maybe final thought okay. on this is I remember back in 2016, I was talking to a senior Republican, somebody who had been around, had actually run for the presidency at one point. And so I've known for a long time, very conservative Republican, but a very sensible Republican. And this is a guy who was backing John Kasich for the Republican nomination that year.
Okay.
And Kasich wasn't doing that well. And I said, well, what are you going to do if you have to choose between Trump and Ted Cruz?
Oh, God.
And the guy said, oh, I'll go for Trump. And, you know, I was thinking at that time already, Trump is incredibly dangerous. He's an incredibly bad player. And this guy said, no, but remember, Ted Cruz he's a very smart man.
Yeah. It's hard to believe, but apparently he is.
At the end of the day, if you're choosing between a very smart, very dangerous person and somebody who doesn't know anything about government, I mean, as bad as Trump was and is, I always remind you, it could be worse.
That's true. I'm with you. And I would take the dumb one over the smart one who knows how things work and how to manipulate it. Because Trump, as he did and continues to do, tries to do things that you just blatantly cannot do. And he'll eventually get shut down where a Ted Cruz or a Ron DeSantis knows how to work, how to game the system because they do have the brain power. So all dangerous, just in different ways. And the higher brain power, the more the dangerous. So
well, that brings us full circle to the January 6th.
And it
because
does.
Because at the end of the day, there is at least the possibility, not the certainty, but at least the possibility that Donald Trump did enough to get himself in real trouble.
Well, you know what?
Let's just hope that that's the case.
And here's the bottom line. He did do enough to get himself in real trouble. He should be behind bars. The question is whether or not our government, our democratic in charge government, will do the right thing or will chicken out and let them off easy. And that's my fear, as you stated earlier.
And that's why we're talking today.
That's right. John Nichols, you're the best. I love talking to you. I could go for hours. I so appreciate your time and your input. I always cherish our conversation. So thank you so much for joining us today.
It's an honor to be with you. I apologize for the wind. We've got a little bit of a storm coming in and super hot here and super windy and but I so appreciate talking to you.
Well,
so
me
too. Strong. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thank you so much. John Nichols of The Nation. Thank you, John. You have a good night. Stay safe there in the heat. Bye. And we all have the heat. You know, it's hot. It's a heat wave. We're having a heat wave. And it's not a tropical heat wave anymore. It's a global warming heat wave. All right. Tomorrow's Thursday. Howie Klein will be here. We have the hearings at 1 o'clock. I'll run through whatever happened, probably talk with him about what goes on there. So that's tomorrow. Thank you for listening, everyone. Keep the faith. We'll get through this one way or another. All right. It is late. I'll leave you with the news. Thanks for listening. Thanks for hanging out, everyone. See you tomorrow. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, there was supposed to be a Wednesday edition of the January 6th committee hearings today, but it's been postponed. The panel released an updated schedule last night, confirming the next three hearings, tomorrow, Thursday, and Tuesday and Thursday of next week, all three of those starting at 1 p.m. Eastern. Monday's presentation was a lot to take in. A few standout moments. Former Attorney General Bill Barr cackling about Dinesh D'Souza's so-called documentary.
Including the 2000 Mules movie.
Clips of Trump like this.
And then they did dumps. They call them dumps. Big, massive dumps.
And of course, a lot of people talking about Rudy Giuliani.
Instead, followed the course recommended by an apparently inebriated Rudy Giuliani to just claim he won and insist that the vote counting stop.
Yeah, and it's not so good advice. While the committee has carried out its investigation and detailed its findings, it's also floated the idea of a few laws that the former guy might have broken, like witness tampering, obstruction of official proceeding, you know, the obvious ones. And on Monday, the panel went down another road of bad behavior, fundraising fraud, involving over $250 million he bilked his supporters for. The action picks up tomorrow. But a bit of housekeeping before we move on. Former Trump campaign manager Bill Stepien was a no-show at Monday's hearing because he said his wife had gone into labor. But strangely, it's now Wednesday, and there's been no news of anything about a birth or anything else. This adds more questions to the pile about Stepien, who appeared to be cooperating with the committee and providing testimony that goes against Trump's false election claims. But HuffPost is reporting that, quote, Stepien never really left Trump, with his firm receiving $20,000 in both February and March of 2021, and as much as $30,000 and no less than $10,000 every month since. His work for Trump to this day, according to an advisor, is to coordinate Trump's political message, including his efforts to defeat candidates who challenged his false claim that the election was stolen from him, or worse, who voted to impeach him over the January 6th attack. Each week, Stepien is on an hour-long call with other Trump aides, including Dan Scavino, Jason Miller, and Donnie Jr. The last such call was on June 6th. Monday's call was canceled because it conflicted with the January 6th committee hearing. Oops, I mean the baby's birth and is it a baby yet? Still nothing. Now, about last night. It was primary day in Maine, Nevada, North Dakota, and South Carolina. There were mixed results in South Carolina where five-term Republican Congressman Tom Rice was trounced in his primary by a challenger, State Representative Russell Fry. The vote came down 51-25%. Rice was notably one of only nine House Republicans who voted to impeach Trump over the events of January 6th. In the 17 months since he voted to impeach the then president, Rice faced death threats, a censure from his state's Republican Party, an ugly campaign, and now defeat in the primary by a candidate supported by Trump. But also in South Carolina, Republican Congresswoman Nancy Mace won against her primary challenger in the 1st District, 53-45%. Mace notably voted to certify Biden's win in the 2020 election, and Trump went after her bigly, backing former state assemblywoman Katie Arrington, the same person who defeated then-Congressman Mark Sanford in the Republican primary in 2018, only to lose to Democrat Joe Cunningham in the general. South Carolina Republicans then redrew the district last year to make it harder for a Democrat to win. Anyway, Mace also had the support of former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley, setting up an interesting split in South Carolina. Stay tuned. In Nevada, Republican voters back candidates who embraced the former guy's baseless election fraud claims. In fact, the Las Vegas area sheriff, endorsed by Trump, Joseph Lombardo, won the Republican gubernatorial nomination, so he moves on to challenge the Democratic governor, Steve Sisolak. And Jim Marchant, a former state lawmaker who also backed Trump's false election claims, won Nevada's primary for Secretary of State. That's the job with direct oversight of that state's elections. Nervous yet? You should be. Oh, and the Trump-endorsed candidate, Adam Laxalt, also won the Republican Senate primary and will challenge vulnerable incumbent Democratic Senator Catherine Cortez Masto. And in a special election in Texas, a Republican win after Democrat Dan Sanchez conceded to Myra Flores, flipping what had long been a Democratic House seat. President Biden is attempting to do something about the soaring gas prices, now averaging more than $5 a gallon. Today, he's sending letters to Marathon, Valero, ExxonMobil, Phillips 66, Chevron, BP, and Shell to account for the surge. He's asked them to explain the, quote, unprecedented disconnect between the price of oil and the price of gas. He's demanding information on whether there's been a loss of oil refining capacity that would explain some of the price increases. And he's urging the heads of those companies to take part in an emergency meeting with Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm to discuss ways to lower these costs. And adding to Americans' financial concerns, today the Fed is expected to announce another increase in interest rates as
did.
They try to fight inflation. The question is how big of an increase is on the table,
big.
With many analysts expecting the central bank to increase its benchmark rate by 0.75 percentage point, which would be the largest single hike since 1994.
And they did.
Buckle in. This ride's only going to get bumpier. And that's just a bit of what's news. For now, I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.